You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome back to The Dramatist Presents Talkback. I'm your host, Christine Toy Johnson, actor, playwright, and advocate for inclusion. This season, Talkback focuses on how the theater industry succeeds and fails when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion. Our guests are all theater professionals working across North America. We recorded our conversations over summer 2019. The Dramatists Guild of America hosts these conversations. In line with the mission of the Guild, everyone comes to our table with their own opinion and perspective and is free to express it. Whether you're in the business or you aspire to be, we're glad you're here. Today, we tackle theatrical marketing. I'm joined by performer and playwright Charlaine Woodard, who, through the beauty of technology, is in Los Angeles while I'm in Chicago. Welcome, Charlaine.
Thank you, Christine. It's good to be here.
Well, it's wonderful to see you and hear you. I know that you have had so many experiences with marketing departments, and you've taught me so much about when it's right to start getting involved with marketing your own play, et cetera. And I'd just love to let you talk about what you want to say.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a motto, and it is make friends with marketing. As soon as I know I'm on this season, I get in touch with marketing. And one of the things I let them know about my play, I tell them I know about my play, so I share what I know with them. And I know the audience that I would love for them to invite to my play, and I share that with them. And, you know, I give them the log line of the play, you know, that single sentence that lets everybody know what that play is about. And I have actually, in other times, I have asked them to hire a publicist that knows the community that I'm really going after just for that play, so that I have had like 720 seat a theater with a 4-week run with a complete diverse audience for the entire sold out time. Because, you know, if the theater has a play that doesn't do well, that's okay. They're going to do 7 more plays that season. But if your play doesn't do well, that really affects you. So it's important to get very involved with marketing. And you'd be amazed at how marketing wants to get involved with us. We help them with their job, you know, because a lot of times these marketing departments in regional theaters, they don't have really diverse staffs. So, you know, they'll say for a play of mine, well, we can hit the church audience. And I say, okay, the church audience is wonderful, but then there are all these other groups and all these other things that we could possibly do. I also get involved with the look of the promotion. You know how we own our play and we own our likeness? Well, I get approval over the marketing, and I give suggestions even on what I might even think they might do to attract an audience. Even a ridiculous sketch of something, an idea, they have professionals that can run with that idea and just, you know, enhance it. And there are no surprises. And I start early on. I have had a lot of friends who say, did you see that poster? What is that? I'm very upset. Well, now you've started rehearsals. It is too late to do anything about that.
Charlaine, have you always had the insight to get involved with the marketing department so early, or is there some specific experience that spurred you on to do this?
I learned the hard way that I needed to make friends with marketing in my first two plays, basically. The first play was about the life of a little girl from birth to 12 and her family. And I arrive in a town to do my play, and I see this picture that looks like I'm saying, hallelujah. And it says, oh, rip-rollicking good time. And that's not what the play is about at all. They're promoting it as if it's a musical. It's not at all a musical. And it's really not a rip-rollicking good time. But by the time I got there, it was too late. And in the second play, the play was a coming of age. Oh, and it was a solo play. That's another thing. somebody didn't tell them that it was a solo play. So that was a problem because back in the 90s, folk didn't really take to solo plays, really. We had to sort of turn them on to solo plays. The play was a coming of age of a young, of a little girl in the civil rights era. I get to town and there were posters all over town with the end of the play and she's ascending into the heavens and it's the entire end of the play told on the poster. And I had to change that poster because it gave away the entire end of the story. So you have to make yourself known to the marketing department. And then when you get to town months later, go in and talk to them and let them know you love the way they're marketing you. You love what they're saying online. You know, that's very good. And encourage them because usually if your play does well, you come back to that theater and now they know you.
You mentioned that you have approval over marketing. Is this something that you have come to negotiate in your own contracts?
Mm-hmm. Right away, as soon as they say you're on the season, then they'll send a contract. But I'll always have in there that I want approval of everything because it's my play and it's representing me and my creativity. And they will send you every idea that they have. And I also help to write the synopsis. I help and I make sure that they know that this is a team effort. I'm not going in demanding A, B, and C. I'm suggesting and letting them know constantly really what the play is about and how I'd love to have a diverse audience because I can do the play in silence, but it's really nice when there's some give and take with the audience. So I always let them know that diversity is a real important thing to me. And I've always done that from the very beginning. And they work towards that. We throw ideas around and we have things I have to sometimes fly into town to do before I even get there.
Have you ever gotten pushback from a marketing department about the ideas that you have?
Yes. Oh, yes. Because first of all, we can't afford it. They have very limited funds, these theaters in general. Everybody has limited funds. So they can't afford a lot. But I say, but let's not have any posters that's like newspaper print where I can't find the name of the play on the poster, on the card. I mean, that has happened. And I said, why did this happen? Well, we didn't have a lot of money, so we had to do it in black and white. So I actually say that make sure that we can see the title of the play. And I say these things in a very lovely way, like it's a suggestion.
That's pretty important.
Because you know what? If this play works at that theater, they will look at your other plays, and this becomes one of your theater homes. You know, I market myself to the marketing department. I let them know what my following is on Facebook and Instagram so that I'm reminding them about social media. And one of the ways I have introduced that diversity subject is I ask, is there anyone on staff who knows my audience? You know, once I've explained the audience I want, then I ask, is there anyone on staff who does know that audience? If there is no one on staff, is there anything in the budget that can help us connect with that audience?
That is so smart.
Oh, yes. But, you know, if you don't do this, you learn the hard way. I was up at Sundance just recently. I'm sitting at the table with playwrights, and the playwright is upset because they've sent her the poster of her first play, and it's the poster of how she's going to look all over this particular lovely town. And the writing is all wrong. The calligraphy is almost embarrassing, and her photograph is not even bright enough. You can hardly see her, and it looks so crazy. And she was furious. So I sat there at the table at dinner and told her, well, it's not too late. At least they're showing you this 2 months in advance. and you can make a difference.
And how did she react?
Well, she said, I'm going to have my people do this. And I said, do your people know your play? Do your people know your audience? Do your people know what you want, what's in your mind? It's really lovely to talk to them. You can call them up and introduce yourself. Market yourself to the marketing department.
I think some people are shyer than you and I are.
Yeah, and yes, I know. I'm an actor who writes plays, and most playwrights don't want to do that. Or explain it to your representative so that everyone knows. And everyone has to know that you have. Now, this playwright did have approval of marketing, which is why she received that flyer.
Have you ever run into a situation where the theater was reluctant or reticent to give you the approval over marketing?
Never. It's a funny thing. If we don't ask, they don't give it. But you'd be amazed what they give if you just ask.
Well, that's a new motto to embroider on a pillow, along with what was the first one? Make friends with marketing.
Make friends with marketing. Yes.
I think that's excellent.
Mm-hmm. I just believe we should get what we can get. And you don't get everything that you need, but you don't get everything you want. You get what you need. You don't, but you have to ask.
Great advice.
I do believe that the reason I have never gotten flack from marketing departments is because of the way I ask them and suggest to them, and I collaborate with them. And that's one thing a playwright knows how to do is, collaborate. So if you go into it not saying, I'm having a meeting with marketing, but to say, it's time for this other collaboration, so they can serve that play up in the way you want it served up.
Great advice. My thanks to Charlene Woodard for our one-on-one chat. After the break, I'm joined by a panel of playwrights, producers, and marketing experts from New York City. Stay with us.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
Welcome back to The Dramatist Presents Talkback and our conversation today about how to talk to a marketing department. Today, I'm in Chicago, while our guests are in New York City and Los Angeles. Let's welcome our panel in New York.
Hi, I'm Lydia Diamond. I'm a playwright, sometimes lately maybe a little bit of a television writer, but I'm a playwright and I'm an educator, and it's nice to be here.
Hi, my name is Garlia Cornelia Jones. I am a playwright. I am also a founder of a series for Black playwrights, and I run another organization that supports Black artists. And finally, I am a line producer at the Public Theater.
Hi, I'm Caitlin Baird. I'm the director of marketing at New York Theater Workshop.
And let's bring back Charlene from Los Angeles.
Yes, I'm Charlene Woodard, and I'm a playwright and an actor.
Thank you so much all for being here today. I want to start off with this question. When should a playwright start to get involved with the marketing of their own play?
This is Lydia. I think it's important to start marketing as early as possible. I'm always appreciative when a theater company reaches out to me on the front end, and I always say that I'm the kind of playwright who is always thrilled to help them sell my show. There seems like there's a lot of times in the regional theaters, and I work in the regional theaters more than I work in New York. It seems like there's always this kind of, oh, we don't want to bother you, would you like? And because marketing a Black play is not necessarily part of the mainstream of their marketing, their default marketing, it's imperative that they partner with me to market. But I do spend a lot of time on the front end, like selling that idea.
Yeah, and I would add that I think that something that is really important for theaters and for playwrights to even remind theaters is that a lot of times, like I've come from a very community-based groups, and so we all market our shows because that's something we do because of our friends, and that's just how we operate. And so when a playwright or the actors or anybody involved wants to market the show, I think that is important for the departments to hear, not as they're doing our jobs, but also as that's part of the community and it's an extension. And I think that is something that I think is interesting to navigate, you know, coming as any POC artist into a bigger institution where they're really working to fill the house.
I like the way you phrased it because I hadn't thought about that in terms of, because it does seem like there's a tension sometimes. I think, I don't know, but I fear sometimes that marketing thinks that you're saying you're not doing a good job. I mean, and sometimes you have to say that. But mostly, if they could understand that it's part of the culture of being a Black artist in largely white institutions, right, in a discipline that is sadly really elitist. Yeah. And in institutions that are built on assuming that the audiences are white. Mm-hmm. And so I like the way you said it. I'm going to use that.
Go right ahead. It's really important to spread that news. Like, everyone just needs to know that, because at the end of the day, the playwrights want to see their friends and family and the communities that they wrote the play in their minds for. And if they're is, you know, something that impedes that, or they feel like there's a struggle, at the end of the day, the playwright is not going to be happy. And then that is a challenge just being in the theater, because you want your play to be seen by all these people. Right. But if they can't, you know, come, so how do we just work as a team? I think it's just, you know, the playwright being very firm and saying, this is what I want, but also the departments being open, right, and understanding that. And, you know, we all know that there's dances that are done to make those things happen. Yeah.
I mean, I'll say as somebody who spends all of my days thinking about and literally dreaming about marketing and how to share work, and somebody who comes from an art-making background originally, that's music to my ears to hear that you want to join, right? Because, I think on the administrative side, I never want to impede the great work that you're going to do in the room and, what you're taking on and making a play. And I have such a tremendous respect for the energy and care and life that it takes to do that. And I try to begin every process with a conversation with the generative artist so that I know what I don't know, right? I start by reading the play, and then I begin by asking questions to say, tell me where this came from, and tell me what this means to you, and tell me, what your dreams would be, and what does this look like, and what does it sound like, and talk to me about the world. Because as a marketer, my job is to figure out how to translate that work that you're doing in the theater that's so ephemeral, that lives in that one night and then the next night and the next night, and translate that to an audience, find the audience, entice the audience in, pique their interest, and just sort of be a shaman, but not to impose my own self on it, right? Because, you know, I read it with one person's perspective, but just one person's perspective. So
it's tricky, isn't it?
Yeah.
I've always been curious, do you get that from white playwrights as much as you get it from playwrights of color? We'd like to partner with you. We feel it is imperative that we partner with you.
Every experience is different. I don't know if I could say on the whole, because every artist, there are some artists who say like, nope, I don't want any part of that. You do that. I do this over here. And plenty of people who have no interest in it, right? They don't want to talk about sales. They want to make art. And they'd rather keep sort of a separation of church and state. So I think every artist probably has a different process. When we're talking about audience development and community outreach and opening doors, I'm going to enter the room with the life experience that I have and try to bring as many people into that room and as many ideas into that room and pursue every possible idea that I can.
It's interesting because sometimes I feel like earlier in my career, I felt almost immediately that my relationship to the marketing department was adversarial. And it had nothing to do with the brilliant, lovely people who were in charge of marketing, but a lot to do with how I'd seen shows at the theater marketed in the past, mm-hmm. and also what I'd seen the demographic of the audience being. So in my mind, if I go to a show that is like a black show and the audience is 95% white, I feel like marketing maybe doesn't really want black people in this space. It's all very about feelings. It's not necessarily intellectual. But more recently, I've come to think of it more as a collaboration. But I have wondered sometimes if there are other playwrights like myself, and so there isn't kind of already in the water a sense that it's going to be adversarial, you know, even when I'm coming right, if you will.
I also think that playwrights like Dominique, more and more so, have done a really wonderful job of making sure that the theaters are working in tandem with her. And that is very helpful for other black playwrights and other playwrights of color to see, okay, you know, we can be involved. We can say, this is even the rules of an engagement that she has, which with each of her plays are
It helps that Dominique
huge.
Is like sunshine itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I agree
that's helpful.
With that.
This is the reason why I say my approach is to contact them early on and say, I'd like to collaborate with you. That word helps anybody's resistance.
Sometimes, Charlene. Sometimes.
I mean, no, it doesn't always help, but it puts you in that room with them so that at least you can be listened to.
I wondered if all of you have advice for playwrights who might not be approached by a marketing department like Caitlin runs with all of those wonderful questions. If you have advice about how playwrights can be clear with the marketing department, setting up this collaborative spirit, but also being really clear and firm about their own vision that they want to see manifested in the marketing.
It does feel like more and more marketing departments are getting really more sophisticated about that. I feel like 10, 15 years ago, it was like, what is she saying? She wants to be involved in marketing? Mm-hmm. What? And now I feel like I'm more often than not invited, whether or not mm-hmm. they always mean it. Mm-hmm. I do feel like it's become a part of the rules of engagement. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah. I mean, I also wonder if you haven't received the invitation, then send the invitation to start a conversation, right? To take that approach and flip it on its head and say, I'd love to talk about this play. Can I share more about it? Because like, I mean, for me, every single thing that I hear is an idea and an opportunity. And I should also say that conversation that I host is not just marketing. That's producing, that's education, it's development, it's the press team, because every single idea and every single, you know, bit of story that we hear is an opportunity to pursue a thread. Oh, you know, we could that aligns with this story. Could we pitch, you know, something about this play and this other play that we just did, or this play that's happening across town? It's like more and more the landscape is not less competitive, and there's so many ways that people can spend their time. So we've got to be smarter, and we've got to work together to share these stories and to continue to find an audience and maintain an audience and bring in new audiences, right?
I was just going to say, I would also say that if a playwright has a specific group or organization, if they know the schools, the alumni groups, churches, I mean, if they know who they want in the audience, that's the perfect opportunity to create, you know, codes or create groups and just get those people in there early. And I think the more that we know who we want in the audience and the more it is that, the collaborative spirit, the more the team, the marketing team can go and do all the work they have to do and say, here you go, you know, creative team, here's what you need. Let's go out there. And then if people don't buy the seats, then, you know, that's a whole other thing. But that's a really great first step to kind of have everybody on the same page to start.
I think it's also interesting to talk about certain assumptions that might be made about what audience would respond to the play. I was talking once about one of David Henry Hwang's plays and how the marketing department was trying to approach audiences in Chinatown to come see it. And I thought, that is just not even the place you should be thinking about going. But there's an assumption that because he wrote this play, that's where the audience was. So
yeah, I've had a lot of that. Like, they're going to send, you know, they'll send you to a church. And I'm like, well, I would love for all of you to come. I hope you're okay with pedophilia and, you know, like, but otherwise, yes. I open my arms to the congregation.
Yes, please.
That's another thing. When I did my first play in one of these theaters, they said, you have a busload of people coming from, you know, a black neighborhood. And I was so excited at the matinee, and I go out, there's music playing, Miles Davis's All Blues, and I say to the audience, you hear that? And the audience responded, yes. They were 8 to 10-year-old girls, 50 of them. And it was so horrible. And I just, at intermission, you know, I just wanted to rip that dressing room apart, you know, but what can you do? I had to explain, go in, this is what I mean. I didn't explain anything. I thought it was common sense. And I had a black audience of babies.
Well, I had a question for Caitlin.
Please, go ahead. It's great. The conversation is fantastic, and I'm all for it. Go ahead.
Okay. For Caitlin, I wanted to know about this. I sometimes am confused about press versus marketing. And to me, it feels like they're very much part of the same thing, but I'm learning that in the structure of the theater, they're very separate. And I'm wondering if it's different in terms of how the way they speak to one another serves different kinds of playwrights over others, or if it's just the way it is because it has to be that way.
I think it probably depends on the size of the company or the, you know, muscle behind a show. But often I think it's really sort of two different sets of contacts, right? Press is advanced, right? Feature coverage, people writing about the show, reviewing the show. And, you know, more and more of that now is online content, right? There are a lot of different ways that press can go. But press feels like it's strictly about unpaid content, right? And marketing is going to be more in the advertising realm, but bridges over into a lot of different areas. So maybe marketing is the umbrella and press is one component under it. Press teams maybe wouldn't appreciate that, that structure.
Yeah, I would.
But.
I mean, and I'm thinking about this in terms of our press and marketing teams at the Public, or, you know, there's a, as you said, there is kind of an overarching communications, but they're different groups of people who focus on the press releases and the features and the news versus the content, the creating of videos and creating of content that promotes the show, and I interact with them as a producer. So there's different ways I interact with both press and marketing in terms of.
So if I say to a theater company, I would love to partner with you to help sell my show in whatever way is necessary, and I'm a new playwright, maybe my first big regional show or something, how do I know who to start that conversation about, I want to collaborate with you? And yes, I think that's my question.
I feel like the first meeting might even be with both the teams, because at the end of the day, they will work in a tandem. So if the first meeting is with both, then they can discuss what really they need for their press release and the information that the other side will need in order to market the show to different communities or where to buy advertising, as you were saying. So, yeah, I think the first place is to start with both. And then, of course, people will break off into the smaller groups, and then you can have a more intimate meeting with marketing to kind of really build a strategy. Or they already have one, so you can hear what they have to say and say, oh, how about this? Or I have this idea. I really love to collaborate. Why can't we all be friends?
Right, right.
We are.
We're so well taught in the theater. Like, we understand in the rehearsal room all of the nuances around which lane you're in and how you cross into somebody else's lane and the silos and the whatever, but they don't teach us how to work institutionally as artists and when you're in somebody's lane.
Charlene, I just wanted to bring you back into the conversation, too, because I think you and I both have experience as actors and writers and dealing with press and marketing, those two different perspectives. And in your case, many times you are the person in your own play. And I'd love to hear from you about your particular insight on that.
And perhaps because I am the actor who's running the whole thing, the whole evening, maybe this is why they listen to me, and we do come to agreements on things by everybody throwing their ideas into the pot. But one thing I do notice about these regional theaters is that they have a cookie cutter approach to marketing. It's all very cookie cutter. This is what we do at this point. This is what we do at that point. So when we come in there with these suggestions, we're breaking down walls. It's like, you know, and but I know I feel like I managed to get in there because they really don't want to upset the person who's got that whole play on her back for those whole 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah. Because when you're just the writer, they're like, oh, my God, just appease her and she'll be gone in 2 weeks.
No, this person is around in the building. This person is coming to you saying, what's happening with that Sunday show? You know, this person is in there for the run. And but you're right. It's a different thing with me. I have actually said, I need some flyers. And I went to the local Whole Foods and gave out flyers and told everybody half price tonight and got my audience. I was upset with this group that had not produced an audience for me. When they saw that I was giving out my own flyers saying half price tonight and people came with that, they had to honor it, and then they got to work. That was early on in my run. I feel like if we don't get hands on, we go down. I've experienced it. I was forced to get involved. And with each play still, I have to get involved.
Can I add that I think it's interesting because I sometimes think that people forget that we're also talking about the quality of the art. Like, you know, we're writing plays almost always, if we're playwrights of color, that in some way have to do with the intersection of class and race. And we're in these theaters that are largely white, and there's a conversation to be had. But if the conversation isn't happening because the audience is so homogenous, the play is landing in a way that maybe gets less laughs. I find that if they're, you know, at least 20 to 30% people of color in the audience, the people of color give the white people permission to laugh and, you know, and on and on. And I think sometimes it's hard for theater companies maybe to hear that and to trust that. And then here's the thing that's like on the dark side of the conversation which is the conversation that any of us who've been sitting on panels about race and inclusion in the American theater have been talking about for decades, which is, do they really want Black people in their houses? That's important. I say Black, I beg your pardon, people of color, mm-hmm. people of any color, do they want to have non-white audience bases?
Well, I also think that the playwrights find these conversations maybe more stressful, or they are more apprehensive to say things when there are fewer artistic leaders and there are fewer people of color on the staff, and that it's something that I know a lot of theaters are working to change.
Are they?
It's something that just it makes my palms sweat, and you just because I can't even, and I stutter, but right now I'm just speechless because, you know. Yeah.
Well, I feel like whether I'm wanted there or not, I have a story to tell, and I've put myself there, and I'm telling that story, and there will be an audience if I have to go out and grab it myself.
That's why I'm so glad you're doing this podcast, because I don't know, you know, we're in these little silos, writers, mm-hmm. and particularly writers who aren't from New York. There's not like a necessarily a community of writers. So how do you know if you're being given your first regional theater show? Already the power dynamic is such that we are doing you the biggest favor to have put your show on our stage.
And that right there is what slows us down. I let them know the biggest thing you have is that you've brought me to this stage, and I'm the only Black show you had in the whole season.
Absolutely. And how we empower young playwrights, the importance of doing that, because I remember also earlier in my career feeling resentful. I am opening in 3 weeks and I'm trying to write a show and I have to sell it too. Mm. I'm less resentful and more resigned, but I do think that's a really important thing for young playwrights, maybe period, but certainly young non-white playwrights to know that they have the power to do that.
Yes, it's an uphill battle. It's always going to be an uphill battle. We haven't come to the point where it's going to be easy for us yet, if it ever will be. We have to go in there knowing, why are we writing in the first place? Because our story isn't told. So we have to get in there.
I was just going to kind of circle back to that whole spirit of that word that you used, which was to collaborate. And so we know that there's not a ton of artistic leaders of color on staff. Okay, so we're not, you know, doing any pointing of the finger, but we're just gonna say let's work as a team. So, you know, things change over long periods of time. So right now, what
again,
we all
I
have
say,
to do,
okay.
right? But you know, as we are now, then we just have to have all the things that we want. We want to have these people in the space, these groups, and let's see how we can work with the people who are here so that we can, at the end of the day, say that we went through all of these steps. We brought our hopes and desires and we had the teams to do all their work, and everybody got together and hopefully achieved something. And then we can figure out what worked and what didn't at the end.
And cynical as I sound, I have been able to work with theater companies who really do it very well, you know, for whom it feels like they're putting their money where their mouth is, and they are listening, mm-hmm. and they are partnering with you. And so I didn't want, like, to just spread darkness.
Right. No, and I think that theaters hear all of this. They've experienced it. They've experienced young playwrights in their doors who are not thrilled with what's going on, and they're trying to take next steps and collaborate and work as a team. But it's as Charlene said, it is an uphill battle. But
Caitlin, I'd love to bring you in and from your perspective, talk about your response to this, what you wish that other marketing departments, other theaters would do in line with all of the concerns that were just raised.
Sure. I mean, I think from our perspective at the workshop, we're taking more and more steps to engage in a sustained conversation. So it's not just about, you know, one play, and that it's in fact an ongoing relationship, so that your play might present an opportunity to open the doors and meet new people. And then how do I continue that conversation and make you know that you're always welcome here, so that hopefully that audience is changing, not just for your play, but in general, right? An audience has no reason to trust me if I pop up, you know, every once in a while, right? But how can I continue to consider the marketing of a production, of a season, of an organization in a sustained way to host? What kinds of conversations can I host? What kinds of events can I host to create a community to make you feel welcome for a play, which is the start of a conversation? So it takes an investment of time. It takes an investment of ideas and coming to a table honestly to acknowledge where we're all at and to collaborate. And you've got to put resource behind it is the other thing I'll say, right? That like that doesn't just happen with like hopes and dreams, you know, that you got to put some money into advertising. You got to put some money into events. You know, you may need to hire somebody if you don't know people in a community. We need to find a partner to help us make connections and build relationships with people, because they have no reason to trust me if this is the first time we've ever met.
Do you build in higher budgets for plays that would ask you to reach out to audiences that are not automatically always coming to your theater?
I mean, the budget is so tied to the income of a show, right? So it's like I can negotiate for money, but I might instead, if I'm not going to get more money, because like I'll ask for more money all the time, right? For everything I do. But instead, I might reallocate money and try to figure out how I'm going to spend resource and what's the most important thing for this project. So sometimes, yes.
Now, at one point, I asked, is there anyone in this department who knows my audience and can reach my audience? And they said, not really. And so I asked if they could hire this publicist that knew the entire community, all the groups, everything. And when I did that, they negotiated with him for a price, and he came in and he did an amazing job for the run of the play. It was a completely diverse audience for 4 weeks of a large theater, and it sold out. But he was paid specifically to bring in a diverse crowd of people.
I feel sometimes like maybe there's a sense of if we hire a consultant, they will be the marketing department, because we don't know nothing about marketing, no black plays, you know. And it feels wonky a little bit.
Well, he was always in on all of our meetings. So he just became a part of the team. Yes, they really do like to bring in those consultants. They lean on them, but that's where we stay in it. And they are a part of all the meetings, so that they're throwing around the name of the Lynx and the 100 Black Women and, you know, all these kind of names of these groups of people that will buy tickets if they know your play is there.
And it requires that the institution actually be invested enough in it, because, right, if we're doing this subscriber-based thing, mm-hmm. is it really that big a deal if the February show doesn't sell as diversely as we would have hoped?
Exactly.
I don't know. That sounds cynical, but I think that the whole reason we're having the conversation, right, is to empower us to know to have those conversations. But one of the things that I've learned, that the consultants are given a budget that is smaller maybe than a marketing budget. But if the theater just kind of says, here it is, and then wipes their hands of it, then the consultant's hands are tied
right. Anyway,
which then, you know, affects their good name.
And I think that's when the consultants, as Shirley is saying, have to be included in the whole. There's a really big picture of all of this, and it includes the consultants, the
art department.
It includes everybody.
Social media.
I'm going to repeat, working as a team to do all of this. But there's so many different components that will create that end goal. And so it can't be one person hire this consultant because they're a person of color and they're going to do everything. And then we're going to go market the other shows, because then that's just a recipe for
And I'll also say, you know, I think sometimes, right, for me, if I'm bringing someone else in on the team, that person is another collaborator and a person who brings experience and knowledge and opinions that, I mean, you're foolish if you're not listening to and respecting and engaging with. Like, we're all on a journey to continue to learn. And marketing as a landscape is changing faster than we can keep up.
Instagram is like, I think that's something that's really huge is that, you know, playwrights need to know, and I tell this to people all the time. I have a personal and a professional Instagram. So there's two. You know, there's a public face and one that's private. If you want to show your kids and things, but I think that helps so much for people, especially now.
Absolutely.
I would say that something that's really cool about Jeremy O'Harris is that he is very active on Instagram. And that, I think, is something that allows the audience to get to know him and to engage with him in a really cool way. And there are also other playwrights, but he's one that I think just kind of comes to mind when you see, I don't know how many followers he has, but it's something.
He's got that blue check mark.
Right. And so that is cool. That's just really cool.
And, you know, more and more artists who feel really comfortable in the social world, right, and who wants to be a part of the sales side of a project, they're a tremendous resource just by sharing insights from the process. And to loop back, we were talking about the difference between marketing and press, right? Like, press can create tremendous opportunities that marketing can then leverage to, like, signal boost. You're going to trust that piece of press coverage way more than you're going to trust some advertising copy. But you can take that piece of content that an audience will inherently trust because it gives you a deeper insight. It gives you a more honest insight. It's some, like, fun social media stuff that the artists are doing, silly stuff on breaks in the rehearsal room. Like, it can be the most benign content that you can signal boost as a way to pique someone's interest and grab their attention in a very crowded advertising marketplace, which again is the start of a conversation, right? It feels like so much of this is about beginning a conversation with an artist, with an audience. That's where it all starts, and that's the opportunity. So however we can work together to seize those opportunities and make something to drive the attention to the art, right? Like, that's what it all comes back to. So the more we can remember, we're all working towards the same purpose, and we all have the different things that we're going to do, and no artist should feel the burden of having to market their show. Like, you know, Charlene, the notion that you're standing at a Whole Foods handing out flyers because that's the only way to find an audience is like, oh, I feel that because that means, you know, we've let you down on the other side of it. If you, in addition to performing that show and writing that show, have had to take on the opportunity of being the on the front line salesperson at that level, then there's a break somewhere.
It certainly did embarrass the marketing department, and it jiggled them and put them into action.
Oh, no. We're all so excited. I was going to say, I think that kind of goes back to what we were saying about the tension between an artist saying, I want to help to market this show, because then it's like we're not, it's that final line of, are you saying we can't do our jobs? No, we know how to do our jobs, but we're saying, oh no, this is a community thing. We want to build community. But then does community mean that the playwright stands outside of a Whole Foods if Charlene is saying, no, not quite, you know?
I've been thinking about how we really have to start marketing our own plays before they even get produced. And I wonder if anyone has thoughts about how being conscious of that can lead forward into the next phase of the collaboration with the teams that we encounter when we are being produced.
Okay, this kind of moves my hat over to my playwright hat, because I have a play I've been working on forever. But something I did for a lot of plays when I was in my MFA and afterwards was I would always hire someone to do art. So two of my plays have art that I paid someone to do. And that was, for me, a way to kind of say, this is my play. There's one play that I don't think will ever be done. But the other play, I hope someday some theater wants to produce
it. How do you use the art? Like, what do you do?
I use the art. So I also do a lot of Photoshop and things. So I create my own, like, images. So I would use her art for my flyer. And in my mailing, I would send it out.
If the play isn't being produced yet, are you sending the visual out with the play as you send it to producers?
Yeah. Okay. So I have sent it out with producers, and so then when we do a reading of the play, I already have some artwork that people can associate with the play. So that's something, and I think you don't have to pay a lot. You know, you're not paying hundreds of dollars, but if there is a way to create any kind of artwork, that is something that, you know, if people go through my Instagram feed, they'll see that show pop up a few times. It's, you know, over the years, and I assigned it a hashtag. So that's a thing that, if it doesn't ever exist, it did at some point. And if it does, then great. I already got it started. You know what I mean? So
that's so cool. Christine, you asked the question, do you do marketing on your plays before they're produced?
Well, I've heard different producers' opinions about this, whether it's about specific artwork. Maybe it seems like it's, if there is specific artwork, it turns them off because they want to have the ability to be in on something from a very early stage. But I also am thinking about marketing in terms of how we have to sell our own play to a theater and whether that part of the thought process can be useful in leading us to start these collaborative conversations once we are in the door. So it's sort of a hypothetical question, but something that's been on my mind, because I do feel that we have to start thinking from the business point of view earlier than perhaps we'd like to.
Can I say that Michael R. Jackson, he has a play called Strange Loop. So as he workshopped that play, he would do little videos. And long before that play saw the light of day, or you knew this song and you knew that song, and from here and from there and from that little workshop and from that little workshop. And I'm doing a thing of with each workshop, making sure that everyone knows we're in this town now. Oh, we were up at Sundance this time, and we're here and we're there. And you let them know, because he made me want to come to his play because I heard these little tidbits of it online.
So it's all online. I mean, that's interesting.
Online, and it was, yeah.
It's all about social media, it sounds like.
And if I could offer, I'm married to a playwright. We spend so much time talking about theater at home and how to talk about plays. So one of the things that I think is helpful in that context is beginning to craft what the, like, elevator pitch is for the show, right? What's the way to communicate in the shortest span of time? And it's not about the plot of the play, but it's about what's that hook that gives an audience the why, right? Why to come around. It's not the what, the how, and the why, right? And it's not the what or the how that motivate people, but it's the why. So if you can begin to help articulate, as the person who's closest to the project, what the why is and what it is you want to say, even if you don't ever want that to be written in marketing, right? But, like, if you can help to communicate that, I think that's how you connect deeper to a person, you know, past the brain into the, right, into the inside. And then, yes, to the Michael R. Jackson and the Jeremy O'Harris. And, you know, part of it is promoting yourself, which, like, maybe getting more comfortable with that notion, gets more comfortable with the notion of marketing in general. Because I think at first when you start doing that, maybe it feels icky or weird, or like, do I have to really talk about myself? You know, so many writers would rather not and would rather write. And that's their collaborative means and their voice, but building the community around your art, which is exactly what Michael is doing when he's posting those tidbits of, like, here I am and here I am, and he's giving people insights and he's winding people up as they encounter the work. I worked on the marketing for Hadestown, and we inherited this huge following from Anais Mitchell's album,
where then we could look and hook into people who are already fans of her work to signal boost them, because you're going to trust someone else much sooner than you're going to trust the marketer, the producer voice on a show. And that inherently may also serve in getting that play produced. If you have a community, a circle of writers, and you're sharing work between them, and then that person is like, oh, I read that person's play, I love that person's play, and they're telling somebody else, it's like a big network. So the more seeds you put into that network, the more reach we all build, right? It's like we all just want each other to succeed, hopefully. I don't know, that's a Pollyanna point of view.
Do you think it would behoove a playwright to hire a publicist?
Well,
because as I'm listening to you, I don't know how to do any of those things.
Before you get to a project, I'm not sure. Because I've certainly seen a personal publicist during a production, you know, that can take off. But how and where you resource that from, like, you gotta have deeper pockets than I do as a human probably to do that.
On a pay, well, that's where things like paid Patreon are helpful, you know, for creative arts. Like I've been on there for a while. Just before, it's called. It's called Patreon, Patreon. And it's a way for it's a way for an artist to engage with their fans in a way that they become patrons. And so in that way, an artist can kind of grow, and there are so many ways that a person can use that. There is not one way, and if you go on there, you'll see all the hundreds of thousands of ways. But you're thinking, like, how does an artist in this age try and promote themselves if they don't know how? Well, how do they engage it when they don't have the funds? Well, this is a way. You know, there are so many ways for us to figure out how to be artists, which is a whole other podcast topic.
I just want to say thank you for having this conversation. Caitlin, building the community around your art, that is something I feel like the Dramatists Guild is all about. And I'm so grateful that you articulated it in that way. I just want to I'll say again, thank you so much for joining us in this conversation. As always, to be continued. And I want to wish you all the best things for all of your plays that you're marketing.
Same to you, Christine.
This has been The Dramatist Presents Talkback, a production of the Dramatists Guild of America and Boom Integrated. Our podcast is lovingly produced by Sarah Storm, Christine Toy Johnson, and Amy Von Masick. It's edited by Jen Grossman and Clint Rhodes of John Marshall Media. Special thanks to Tina Fallon, Ralph Sevish, David Foe, Terry Stratton, Adrian Glover, and John Marshall Cheery. Talkback is distributed by the Broadway Podcast Network. Like and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For episode transcripts and exclusive content, visit us on the web at dramatistsguild.com. Keep the conversation going on Twitter using hashtag DGTalkback. I'm Christine Toy Johnson. We'll see you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.